You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J, TCRG.
All right, we are back and welcome to TCRG to CEO Radio. I hope you enjoyed the last episode because the boys are back.
Hey!
We are joined once again by Ryan McComb and Christian Caron to talk about different issues that face teachers and studio owners that either have male teachers or are run by male teachers or studio owners. So this is a little bit of a continuation from the last episode. I'd recommend that you go back and listen to that one before you go any further with this one.
Yeah, and I'll start by the disclaimer by saying that this is maybe the more serious, slightly less fun episode.
But important.
Absolutely. And look, the last episode was more focused on boys as dancers. This one's going to be a little more focused on males as teachers. And, you know, let me be the first one to say that we don't have any for sure answers, right? And, you know, though this episode is going to be some of the challenges facing male teachers, we're not here to tell anyone what to do, but we are, a couple of male teachers who have lived some of the challenges that come with being a male teacher. And we thought it was something that might be, particularly if you are a male dancer thinking about getting your TCRG or maybe just got your TCRG, some things you may encounter that we wanted to at least muse on, talk about, maybe offer some thoughts or suggestions.
Yeah, give our experiences and, you know, kind of backpack off of that with each other.
Yeah, I mean, and I was talking to both the guys before we started recording, and there were things that came up that even as a female studio owner and teacher are things that everyone should just be keeping in mind. It is 2019 and child protection has always been important, but is a little bit more heavily scrutinized now. And they're just things that everyone should think about to keep themselves safe.
Absolutely. And like, look, CLRG, we're all in the world of CLRG, has their child protection handbook. And I've read it cover to cover, and I imagine you guys have as well. And rules are great, but you know, the other experience you have is that the handbook doesn't cover every situation you could ever run into, right? There's a couple of things that spring to mind immediately, but obviously the most important thing, being a teacher, a studio owner, someone with any dancing class of any kind, is child safety. And along with child safety, your own safety as a teacher. We know that, you know, all people could be in a situation for something bad to happen, but for better or worse, as Courtney mentioned, you know, in 2019, as a male teacher, there's a heightened level of sensitivity around your interaction with children, and you know, thought it might be good to just kind of touch on some of the things to make sure everyone has a safe environment and a good dancing experience, because that's the most important thing, that everyone comes out loving Irish dancing and loving being in the studio and all the good things that Irish dancing bring them.
All right, I mean, let's kick things off with the list of, I didn't know I'd encounter this, but I did.
I mean, kind of talking back to being a dancer, coming into it from the dancer to now a teacher perspective. When I was a dancer, you would go to a show and, you know, if you're running from show to show or you're getting, going to the first show, there was always that one changing room. You know, that's where we were always put. They said, oh, you can have this back room. That's where you guys can get ready. So shoe changes, costume changes, everything that was happening in that room. So growing up with everybody, you know, you never thought of any issues changing or anything like that. So I think looking at it now from a teacher's perspective, that also now gives you a different light on maybe trying to choreograph a different way of going about doing that. You know, kind of saying, hey, we should, you know, have the guys change first and then the girls, or the girls change first and the guys, or, you know, Ryan, what is your views on this?
Yeah, and I first ran into it. I was assistant teaching at a school, and we were running a show, and there was exactly like you had mentioned, like a tiny backstage area, and I was running the music, and we had very quick shoe changes and costume changes and all this kind of stuff, and I was standing with the father of one of the dancers, and it came time for a change of all of the things, and I jumped right into tying somebody's shoes while someone else was affixing their cape and all of the other things. And the dad had disappeared and came back, and later on he said, like, isn't that kind of uncomfortable? And I said, what? And he said, well, you know, you're around there and like the girls were all changing and all this kind of stuff, and look, I that was the first time I'd ever thought it might even need to be uncomfortable, right? The answer is no. Like, I need to make sure that the shoes are on, the costumes are on, they're on the stage, and the music, the correct music is playing, and we only have 16 square feet of space in which to do all of this, so, like, I'm kind of too busy to even notice what's going on around me other than to accomplish those goals. But it was the first time as an assistant teacher, right, that I ever had that moment of, like, well, this is something I actually have to pay attention to, right? I might not be aware of it, but, for example, from this father's perspective, he felt uncomfortable being around that environment. And, you know, it was a good way of bringing up to me, like, hey, you should look at the environments that you as a teacher, as a person of authority are in. Because, Christian, as you had mentioned, like, when you are the only boy with a troupe of show dancers or whatever it is, like, you make it work. But the moment you have letters after your name, you can't just make it work anymore, right? Yeah. You are now in a position of authority, and that position of authority requires a change in behavior. And until that moment, I'd never had a need to know that that was a thing.
Yeah, I mean, and we were just kind of getting some of those challenges together earlier. And even I felt a little dumb, like, to be perfectly honest, for never thinking of putting it out there to all of our dancers, you know, parents of female dancers and parents of male dancers, to at least put some type of protocol in place of, hey, you know, I'm going to assume that you guys are changing in an appropriate spot, but here's my directive that, you know, go change in your respective, you know, restrooms and come out when you're ready. It just didn't even cross my mind to make that distinction. And it's probably because I've never had the experience of, you know, standing in a dressing room with a whole bunch of, you know, boys changing, right?
Like, sure.
When's that ever happened to me?
Right. And the other thing, too, is, in, like, I think that we had talked about earlier, was there's two pieces to this, right? There is you, the teacher, being in that environment, and there's you, the teacher, who sent your dancers to this environment.
Yes.
Where, you know, you may have, say, you know, senior male dancers or even junior male dancers. Like, there's the two pieces, right? There's you, the TCRG, in a position of authority running the show, for example. You know, where are you in relation to the dancers in that environment? But then there's, you know, someone probably should have had a protocol for us, Christian, you and I. You know,
you guys kind of had to make your own,
yeah,
like, on your own best judgment.
Yeah, I mean, and look, and maybe it's just that in the 90s and the 2000s, it just didn't come up as much, but it's 2019, yeah. And now it's not that we have to talk about.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like you had said, it was the 90s, 2000s, that's not what was on our mind or anything like that. And, you know, coming in at the age I did when I started when I was 4, I started with some of my friends and danced with them all the way until I was, you know, 20, 22, you know, in that age gap. But they were my sisters, you know, there was never anything that anybody would think. But coming from, like you said, after having the initials after your name, you have to think completely differently. And it's not always that first thing that's on our mind, because, like we had said, you know, we'll have a, you know, quote unquote, more or less like a broom closet to change in. So it's, you know, you have to worry about getting the shoes on, make sure the music's ready, and that all the dancers are ready to get on stage and perform. And we're not thinking anything else about anything.
And what's interesting about this particular conversation, at least to me, right, is that the dad felt uncomfortable and the dad spoke to me about it. But I'm not certain he would have spoken to the female teacher that I was teaching for at the time in quite the same way.
As in, if she was standing there running the music?
As in, if she was standing there running the music and helping people change their shoes.
I've never had a parent, you know, wonder where I am and why I'm there. And this is something that is going to be probably a recurring theme in all of these questions is, you know, it seems like it always goes, you know, the male dancers, teachers are more scrutinized than females, even though anyone could be creepy.
Anyone could be creepy. And by the way, like, there's no part of this podcast, at least coming out of my mouth, that's going to say, like, rule number one is don't be creepy. Like, I think that's a given.
Right. Let's all just make that general.
Let's just all make that, like
code of conduct now.
Right. The goal of, I think, everyone, at least that I know in this community, is to do what's best for the children. This isn't about, you know, hey, don't do things that are bad, obviously, right? Yeah. But there is the piece of it that is, look, you want to do the best you can, but here's some things that now, as a male teacher, because, like Courtney, you had mentioned, the male teacher is more scrutinized.
And it's people's perception of what's going on, no matter who you are, too. So even if you're standing there thinking, you know, oh, geez, I didn't even realize everyone was changing, I'm just trying to set up the music, if parents are there, you know, thinking that something else is going on, then you're opening up yourself to all of that criticism and, obviously, you know, or worse.
Yeah, that's obviously what you want to avoid at all costs.
Absolutely. And that you know, we started by talking about the show side, but that translates back into the studio as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that probably transitions into our next challenge, which is private lessons. You know, private lessons are a one-to-one setting, and everyone should be taking measures to protect themselves. And, you know, you don't want it to be a your word against mine type of thing. And for male dancers and teachers in particular, this is something that there should definitely be a protocol in place that is followed so that there's no like question of character or anything that comes up in the future.
And, you know, and part of the unfortunate thing in this particular setting is, number one, I learned a tremendous amount from private lessons. I think they're a great thing, like a great part of a dancer's ability to get better.
Oh, absolutely. And
speaking to two teachers who teach a heck of a lot more than I do, I think they're an important part of the business plan too. From a
from a business that you're running. It's not an avoidable, program or, offering.
Right. Now, we were very lucky in our studio. There were a lot of windows to the outside, right? And I recognize that in a class setting, you might say, hey, you know what? If parents could, like, not peek their head in through the windows, that would be great, because you're just going to distract the beginners when there's, 30 unruly little kids running around. But if you're teaching a private lesson, maybe those windows or that door open is a good idea, right? You want, actually, parent, can you stay?
Yep.
Just to make sure that you've got your eyes on my interaction as a teacher with your child or a couple of children that we're doing a private lesson for. Those windows are really inconvenient when you've got a class of 34-year-olds, but they're really convenient when, as a male teacher, you're teaching a class.
Yeah, or one of our studios has a camera in it, so parents can sit down in the lobby, nowhere, in the direct vicinity of that room, but the camera shows what's going on in that room. So it's eyes in for the parents, but the kids or, teenagers or whoever's in there can't see out, which is another nice option. Yeah.
And I think with having that camera, it is very beneficial because, like you said, the parents are able to sit in the waiting room and look into what's happening in the room, but the kids, teenagers, whoever are dancing, maybe they don't know about the camera or anything like that, but it's that fact of they can't see out. So it's not getting distracted by, oh, my shoe's undone, let me go see my mom or anything like that. It's, it's very, okay, you're in here, you're focusing on dance. But I think having that camera is very beneficial because it is that parent's opportunity to be able to see into the room without actually being in the room itself.
Yeah, I mean, and we haven't used this feature yet. Christian just told me what to buy, but I believe it records also. So if we wanted to, let's just say we had a situation come up where, someone says something happened, we would be able to recall at least that footage and show or prove what did or did not happen.
Which is crazy that, in a world you need to prove what did or didn't happen, but the fact of the matter is,
for your own
protection as a teacher, sometimes you do. And particularly, like, growing up, I mentioned this earlier, right? I've had many teachers in my life, which was both an amazing thing for me learning to dance and be a teacher, and maybe a sign of the fact that I did a lot of hopping around in different things. But all of those teachers did one thing for me all the time, and that was to poke me in the back and pull my shoulders back. That was just a regular part of that. That was a skill I did not have. And everyone sort of approached it the exact same way, which was to poke me in the back and go, like, come on, stand up tall. But that brings up a unique challenge as well for a male teacher, right? Is there was a physical contact with students that at least was common in my growing up, right? A turning out of your foot, a poking of you in the back or pulling your shoulders back or
straightening a knee with your hand.
Absolutely, right? Like, how do you approach that, especially in, and I should ask you guys, as more active teachers, right? How do you approach that in a class environment? How do you approach that in a private lesson environment safely?
Well, I know Courtney and I just finished up our summer camp not that long ago. So I know during that, there was a lot of times where we were working on turnout, crossover, things like that, along with posture. But I know one of the drills we were doing was like a kick out kind of thing. I had told all the dancers, all right, kick out, but also keep your foot in the air. Don't put the foot back down on the ground, keep it in the air. So everybody would do it, and I would walk around and kind of twist everybody's foot. I was like, you need to have the foot like this. So they knew, oh, this is what it needs to be This is how it feels to be turned out. So when I go through this movement, that's how my foot needs to be. So obviously I'm doing this in a room with Courtney and with, you know, 20 other dancers. Or if somebody has, you know, posture problem, it's like you say, hey, can I show you how to fix your posture? They say yes, and you say your shoulders are here, and like you touch them on the back of their shoulders, okay, they need to be back here. They feel that automatically, like, oh, this is what it means to be, like, this is why you keep saying shoulders back, this is what you actually mean. So I think when it comes down to a private lesson standpoint, like you said, that is kind of a harder situation to go by, because it is, you know, kind of your word versus their word and what could be happening. And kind of how we said before, that having that camera and being able to record things, you know, it is beneficial in that fact of, you know, one person's word against the others.
Yeah, I mean, and it came up in our, you know, kind of pre-podcast planning session that sometimes, you know, somebody's truth is different than someone else's truth. So let's just say, you know, Christian puts his hands on my shoulders. Well, maybe I perceive that to be an inappropriate touch. You know, a dancer could perceive that as inappropriate. Then, you know, where does that line come in? It's very tricky.
Absolutely. And it's trickiest for a male teacher to a female dancer, or, you know, just a male teacher in general. It maybe shouldn't be.
Right. Right? It should go both ways.
It should go both ways. But my experience is it doesn't.
Yep. And it's obviously there's no thought process to it. It's kind of just, we're trying to help you as teachers think back to our dancing careers as to saying, like, oh, like, you know, we're trying to teach you different ways so that you're not finding out, you know, at 20 years that you're doing this wrong or something like that. It's fixing it right then and there so you know how to correct it yourself as well.
Yeah, and I think something important that, at least, you know, we might not have all the answers or solutions, but I do like and appreciate that Christian mentioned that, you know, he does ask for, you know, essentially consent to move their foot or touch their shoulders or whatever it is, because then you're giving them the option to say no, and then you figure out a different way to show them.
Absolutely. But, you know, there's something important. I think it wasn't, you know, important to me as a dancer to be able to feel, hey, oh, that's where my foot's supposed to be.
Yeah.
The challenge is, how do you do that in as safe and comfortable a way as possible?
Right. And again, no, not all the solutions, not all the answers, but hopefully gets people thinking about the way they are approaching things.
Yeah. And I always, like Courtney had said, I always like to ask the dancer first, you know, just to make sure that that's okay with them. Because, you know, I don't want to cross their boundaries or anything like that. You know, it's, you want to make sure, the number one thing I think as teachers is always child protection. That's the number one thing that's on our mind. So you want to make sure that that dancer is in a safe environment, but it's also that they're in a safe environment that they feel also comfortable in. So by asking, hey, I see you have a shoulder issue, can I show you? Is it okay if I touch your shoulders to show you how to fix this? You know, and if they say yes, okay, then you show them. But if they say, I prefer you don't, then you say, okay. You can kind of show it on yourself, more or less. Like, hey, your shoulders are at this point. I want you to kind of roll them fully back like this. And this is how you should feel when your shoulders are back.
Totally agree. Nothing else to add.
Absolutely. But you had mentioned, right, you'd mentioned sort of, you know, child protection. And I had mentioned earlier, right, the handbook. You know, CLRG's got a handbook. And you guys are perfect examples of this, because we talked about the fact that the handbook is great and is pointed in the right direction. But
yes.
There's
no way to cover everything that can come up.
And for real life, right?
Exactly. You have all these, but this isn't in the handbook moments.
Right.
Which we were leaving class at the same time last Friday, and we, you know, class finishes. We, you know, shut off all the lights, lock up the building, and one of the dancers is still out in the parking lot. And, you know, it happens from time to time that someone's parent is a little late to pick up. So we ask her, you know, is someone out here for you? And, you know, there's a little bit of confusion about who was coming, where they were, you know, if they were on their way, not on their way. Well, 40 minutes later, the dancer finally got picked up, and, you know, then we're finally ready to leave. And then we kind of got to this question of, well, the handbook says you're not supposed to be at the studio one-on-one with the dancer. So if one of us had been by ourselves, how do you tackle this issue?
And how did you tackle this issue?
Well, thankfully we were together.
Yes.
So, I mean, but honestly, it's like, thinking about it, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's better. Like, we're both still in a position of authority over the dancer. And it's really sometimes that position of authority that makes things questionable rather than male or female. So Dancer, you know, tried to get in contact with the family, and turns out that, you know, 20 minutes into our wait, Dad was getting in the car and would be there 20 minutes later. And we ended up unlocking the building, you know, hanging out in the lobby because it was raining, and, you know, just kind of chatted amongst ourselves for a little bit to pass the time. But honestly, I don't know what we could have done better or differently, or what I would have advised, let's just say, Christian to do if he was by himself. Like, if he had texted me saying, I have to be here for 40 minutes, what should I do?
Alone with a Dancer. Right, and I mean, the handbook says don't do that, but I'm here. So.
Right. So, I mean, other than saying, hey, go into the room with the camera, I mean, I don't know what else I could have said.
Yeah. It's like, at that point, you know, after closing up and everything, it's been about, you know, a couple minutes, and then you come out and see that. And if it is, if I was by myself, you know, what is that situation? What are you supposed to do? Am I supposed to call up another Dancer and be like, hey, you just got on the highway? Cool. Can you come turn around and come sit with me? Because, you know, the child, the book says I can't do this by myself.
Right.
Know? So what are you supposed to do in a situation like that?
Right. And aside from the obvious, you know,
don't be creepy.
Be an adult professional. Right. No, but just be an adult professional. Right. And, you know, that is obviously a big part of this, right? Is be an adult professional and a right. source of authority. The fact that you are male or female doesn't really matter in the being an adult professional standpoint. But it also, you know, that is one of the unique challenges where, hey, what the, you know, what the book says in reality don't align. And that is in a lot of ways where the environment in the studio, I think, comes in, right? Is how well do your parents know you guys as teachers? How well do they know the environment that you foster in the studio, right? Have you been upfront about the fact that child protection and safety is a big part of what you do? Is there clear lines of communication that, hey, this is something that we're all thinking about? Because at the very least, like, look, anyone can say anything at any time, but if right. you foster an environment of trust, there is that moment where someone rolls up and says, hey, I've trusted you to take care of my kid and make sure he or she was okay for 40 minutes, not I'm worried about the fact that my kid's been alone right. with you for 40 minutes.
Right. And that's a really good point. And I think both of us are a little bit different in our approach. Maybe you could talk about the environment that you came from, like just the more close knit.
Yeah. I mean, the growing up, you know, dancing, I was at a school that was very, it was, you know, it was family, you know, they were my confirmation sponsor, everything like that. So it was very family oriented. So it was, you know, also it was a smaller school than, you know, the school I'm currently with. So it is kind of a different perspective in that situation where, you know, you get to know these people. You're at the studio X amount of hours a week, you know, however many days a week, they do become, you know, your teachers practically do become that extended family. So, you know, there should always be that sense of trust, you know. And I remember back to my graduation when I got my TC that one of the people that was talking at the exam had said that, or one of the people that was talking at the graduation had talked about how they became an examiner and kind of their mentor during the process and how to find out, you know, how to know to pass somebody. And they had said that obviously if they know the knowledge that is on the exam and that they know and understand Irish dancing, but also that if you are sitting there and you're with the person and you feel that they are, that you feel comfortable enough to send your grandchild, your children, nieces, nephews to this person to learn Irish dancing, then you know that they're going to be a good teacher.
Yeah. I mean, and I personally am a little bit more of like, you know, keep an arm's length away when it comes to probably the parents. But with that said, I think I do have connections with the dancers themselves, and I would like to think that I'm highly communicative with the parents so that if they want or need to approach me, like, you know, we're certainly out and available at, you know, competitions, and we definitely get to know people in that way. So I would like to think that I've at least proven, you know, enough trust that they would feel safe, you know, leaving their child with me. But at the same time, you know, don't come around my house and, you know, hang out with me.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's a professional boundary, and that's totally okay, right? But it does come to the fact that you do foster a studio sense of trust, right? That, like, in theory, you would hope that parents would always trust, like, leaving right. their child, or they wouldn't go at all.
Exactly. Yeah. And I definitely don't think we right? have, you know, that problem right. going
you
on.
You would hope. But, it, you know, you do want at least a level of communication that, look, everybody knows that this is important to you. Like you had mentioned, you know, you foster a close connection with students, and that's awesome. I always had great relationships with, you know, all of my teachers, both, you know, former and current.
I think you have to. I mean, there's only so far you can take a student if they don't, at least if you don't let them in a little bit and they're not able to kind of let you in a little bit. You know, kind of you have to have that to really get that, to get them going where they need to be.
Well, so in that, and that's where some unique challenges show up. And we had kind of talked about this earlier, is, you know, like for better or worse, like I have a lot of successes as a dancer and I have a lot of failures as a dancer. And a lot of times I was either there alone or maybe I was with there with a parent, but the person who understood it the best was going to be one of my teachers. And, you know, what do you do naturally when someone is excited or upset? You go for a hug, right? You pat them on the back. You otherwise console them or celebrate with them in a particular way. Mm-hmm. I think that's a natural reaction. I think that's what I would do for
I'm
any of my
friends. I'm laughing because that's so not me.
But, you know, I mean, in my experience, at least, and Christian, maybe you're on board.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
Christian's
not
that way.
I right? mean, it's like, that's the thing, though. It's when you're upset, when you're happy, the first thing you do is, you know, you offer a hug. Because that's, you know, you want to celebrate with that person. They worked really hard and, you know, emotions come through. And, Courtney said she's laughing. It's the fact of, you know, if somebody's crying, it's kind of like a, they're there. As where it's like, I'll open my arms. It's like, you know, if you want a hug, I'm here for you kind of thing.
Right. But do you in that moment kind of take a pause and go like, all right, this has to be a very
specific,
type of hug? Because I do, right? Yeah, this has to be a very specific type of hug. Number one, at a competition, especially, it's going to be very, you know, public. But the other thing is just, hey, just be very careful when you do. Like, that worries me, the male teacher in 2019.
Yeah.
In a way that when I was a dancer, I wouldn't have ever thought twice about it because it just wouldn't that came up. But hey, you know what? If you're if you've got TCRG after your name, and you're going to be celebrating with a dancer or you're going to be consoling a dancer, I worry. Like, I just do. That's the reality
also,
of how you feel
I
about
think
it.
Being at a major competition, it is, you know, there's a lot of emotions going on that day. You know, whether the dancer gets a recall or not, you know, you always see embracement, you know, from teachers to students and things like that. So it's kind of, as you said, it's better to be in a public situation or a public area where it's, you know, you're giving that hug or whatever to the dancer, but it's also, don't make it be a 10-minute long hug. You know, it's kind of be short, be sweet with it, but it's also be like, hey, you know, you did really work hard. You did a great job. I am here for you, but also I need to be professional, you know, and... Bye-bye.
I appreciate, by the way, that the podcast environment does not adequately capture the number of times that both Christian and Courtney have held their arms out as far as they can possibly go and basically said, please, dancers, stay out of my bubble.
Yeah, like this is my 3 foot.
Because this is my bubble of personal safety. But I think part of the topic of this discussion is the fact that, like, look, there's in the world of Irish dancing and in the world of emotions that come with it, and, you know, there that bubble is pierced from time to time, but every time it is as a teacher in general, but especially as a male teacher, like, you put yourself in a situation that you might have to explain later. And I didn't know the moment I got the letters after my name that all of a sudden I had to keep a mental listing of all of the times that I interacted with a dancer within a 3 foot bubble.
Yes.
But you kind of do.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not something that I thought of or would have had a reason to think of, I guess, even though, like we said, it should go both ways. And I think this will be eye-opening, or at least give a lot of people a lot of thought.
Yeah, I don't have answers, but I do. I have concerns. Yeah. So new so none of male the... teachers perhaps share these concerns with me.
Yeah, and I mean, to all the things we've talked about so far, it's there really is no answer. But if you know of something that you have done in the past, obviously reach out. You know, this is a great opportunity for brand new teachers or veteran teachers to come together and, you know, talk about these kinds of issues. And it's something, like we said, it, you know, with it being 2019, it's a very different world than it was, you know, when we were all dancers in the 90s and early 2000s.
You want to pause for a second? Because I feel it. And the other thing just to keep in mind for everyone, because I know that there are a lot of parents that listen to this podcast. There are dancers that listen to it. And something that I want to put out there is that the issues of the world, you know, whether it is predators or other things, are not, they're not going to be completely kept out of the Irish dance world, because inevitably it will happen. And
we've
been
very lucky that it has not happened.
Yeah. And I think there's this misconception, because the Irish dance community as a whole is, you know, small and close knit and everyone kind of knows everyone, that something like this couldn't happen here. But I mean, we all know what happens when we say to ourselves, well, it will never happen to me, or it'll never happen here, because we know that it's not true. So just, I mean, my mind immediately jumps to, you know, even feshes now. There are dancers that walk around, you know, that aren't necessarily covered up. Not saying that they always need to be, or that it's always practical, but we also need to keep in mind that anyone can walk in off the streets to most feshes these days, because we aren't collecting door fees a lot of the time. It's open doors, you know, anyone could walk in. And I can think of a fesh even last year that someone did get kicked out of a fesh for, you know, being a creep. And I think a lot of people just have this misconception that, you know, we're all perfectly safe here, and that unfortunately may not be the case.
It's certainly something that, you know, look, I think everybody as teachers tries to make it as safe an environment as possible. But, you know, Courtney brings up, you know, good points, which is the second you step outside of the studio in the Irish dancing world, you know, there's an entire outside perspective, whether it be parents from other you know, dancing schools, or just random people off the street who have decided to pop on into a competition and see it or see the dancers. You know, it's just very important that everybody be aware that, like, look, we like the world to be a safe environment, and we do everything we can to make it a safe environment, but
we can't control every variable.
We can't control it. Like, the handbook doesn't cover all the handbook doesn't cover everything. Right.
So, I mean, speaking of other issues that the handbook doesn't cover, or no, it does cover, but again, not always practical, is transporting dancers. And I'm sure every teacher or studio owner out there has, you know, had a student that's needed a ride from time to time. You know, a lot of households do have two working parents, or, you know, unexpected things come up and, you know, all of a sudden it's you and a dancer in the car together. You know, handbook says no.
Practicality.
Life says sometimes. How do we navigate that one?
You know, I can say, as someone who's been transported with my teacher a number of times, it had never occurred to me that that would be an environment in which I was vulnerable. But now, as a male teacher, statistically, who would be transporting a female student, that is absolutely now, particularly given the handbook, like the first thing you're like, all right, how do I do this? Right.
Yeah.
And aside from the, like, all right, fine, everything in arm's length, like, do you go like, hey, I kind of need you to sit in the back. Right. In a chauffeur kind of way. Honestly, for many dancers, maybe you do.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can think back to, you know, St. Patrick's Day. Everybody's going show to show. And sometimes, you know, a parent might drop off a kid the first day or at the first show and, you know, say like, hey, can somebody please bring them around? I have to get back to work, whatever it may be. And all of a sudden, everybody else leaves and you're packing up, getting ready to go to the next show, and that dancer's still there. Well, you can't call the mom and be like, hey, I need you to come pick up the kid, because they had asked, can you please do this? So like you had said, having the kids sit in the back, you know, chauffeur-like style, it's...
Although, you know, could be a little...
Right. Although
a
awkward.
Little strange,
although
it's,
awkward.
It's, but awkward is better than, you know, the
right.
alternative.
Absolutely.
Because at the end of the day, like we said, it is child safety's number one. And are we going to, you're not obviously going to leave the kid at show number one while you go to show number two.
That might actually be the least safe thing.
Exactly.
So,
and I think,
you know,
this kind of ties in, you know, with the, you know, the dancer left without a ride, you know, what's the lesser of two evils? Hey, I can't be alone with you, so I'm going to go home. You know, if you get abducted or something, obviously that would be worse
well, your
than
mom should
staying
have picked
around
you up.
With them, you know? So it's like you have to pick your lesser of two evils. But I mean, transporting dancers too, I mean, as the studio owner and the business brain, you know, is firing, I'm thinking the liability issue of, let's just say you get in a car accident and you have someone else's kid in your car. I don't want to even think about the...
And honestly, I didn't think about that until you just said that.
And I wouldn't... Agreed. I would have never thought
that's
about
like
it.
Even what I think of more than like predatory behavior is, I have your most precious cargo in my car. And of course, no one tries to get into a car accident. And yet every day people are in car accidents.
Absolutely. That's, again, another example of, so this podcast, basically, I think we've discovered is the things we didn't think about until we started talking about things that worry us as teachers.
Yeah.
So maybe teachers out there, if you're not already slightly worried every time you interact.
Don't worry. There's still more to talk
about. Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, we're still going.
The podcast to induce anxiety.
Yes. But look, reality, right?
Yeah. I mean, so short of avoiding it at all costs.
Right. What do you do, right? Do you say, hey, you know what? As a teacher, like, I'm going to have to leave this kid behind. Or I won't have male teachers because...
Right, that's just not
people perceive
life.
Male teachers as creepy. Like, yeah. Obviously that can't be the case, and I don't have as many answers as I wish I had, and but you know, hopefully some things that folks can think about out there.
But kind of like we were just talking too. You know, if anything, you're the last one there at the show and you have that dancer there, okay. Like it says in the handbook, you can't do that. But in all honesty, it's safer to take the kid with you than to leave them in that environment. So I would say, yes, bring them to the next show. But maybe at the next show, kind of just say to the parents, hey, does anybody else have, you know...
Yeah, try and pass them off to another parent.
Yeah. So that absolutely. The liability is now taken off of you. And not necessarily put on somebody else, but it is
the
in
other
turn
parent
put on somebody
is
else.
Not in a position of authority over the dancer, whereas you are. Which, again, is where the issues... If they are, you know, equal across both males and females, that's really the problem, not being male or female, if that makes sense.
Agreed. Yeah.
So, I think the last one that we came up with was the kids in the studio that just have a deeper connection to you than other students, maybe. And I know both Christian and I have, you know, someone that comes to mind for each of us. And I mean, I'll share mine. I have a adorable little 4-year-old boy who started taking dance classes, one, after seeing his sister dance, but two, because he said that he was in love with me. So, I mean, that wasn't really my student attraction plan, but...
But I'll take them any way they come.
Basically. And, you know, he will bring me gifts. He will ask for cheek kisses. He will give cheek kisses. And, you know, he's 4, so you kind of play along. And, you know, he recently got me a little half a heart necklace that he has the other half to. And, you know... I wonder when I have to call time on this and break it to him that no, we're not dating, and that two, you know, this carry on is going to have to stop at some point. And again, we don't have many answers, but all we have agreed on is that as the dancers get older, it becomes, I guess, more of an issue.
Absolutely.
And then, I mean, Christian has one.
I mean, I can still remember my first day at SRL. I saw this one dancer and... Just their style and everything. It was great, you know, and I was really helping her and everything like that. And come to find out, she doesn't really talk to anybody else. You know, she doesn't talk to Courtney that well. But she'll, all of a sudden, I was like, I just had a full conversation with the girl. So, you know, I have a good relationship with her. She'll come into class. I'll give her, you know, we'll give each other hugs, things like that. But it's, like you said, where is that line start where, you know, you need to...
Right, she's 8 right now. How long can it be cute before people perceive it to be something else?
Absolutely. And that's, I think that is a you know, a big issue is that, look, you start teaching dancers. Like I have dancers that I remember teaching is beginners and novice kids who are now basically like adult teenagers, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. You know, I was assistant teaching when they were beginners, and now they're like fully functional adult humans with their own like personalities and responsibilities who are in fact assistant teaching other dancers, by the way, which I love, right? Like that's awesome. I am super proud of them. I am still super close with many of them to this day. But it does, you know, now that you have the letters after your name and you're interacting with these like older teenage dancers who, when they were 4 and 8, were the ones who like came up to you and gave you a hug and wanted to jump on your back and run around, right? When I was a dancer who was assistant teaching. Like, okay, great. Now that person's like 16 years old and you're still super close with them. You've made a good connection. You've helped them, you know. They, as far as I can tell, reciprocate the feelings of being well connected with you.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, but from another parent's perspective, you're like, yeah, I know that I've got 10 years of history with this person and their family and their siblings and their parents. And like, we've got a very unique relationship where I've been a part of their life for longer than I haven't been a part of their life. What do other parents say when that person comes up and like sort of half jumps on your back again? Cause that's what they've been doing since they were 6.
Yeah.
But now they're 16.
And like you said, it's when they're 6 and they jump on your back. Yeah, that's fine. But as you said, looking at it from a different perspective, yeah, a 6-year-old, that's fine. But all of a sudden now a 16-year-old jumping on your back, it's, you know, somebody that might not know what your relationship is with that dancer, that might raise questions, or, you know, it might raise an eyebrow to like, why is this happening? As where, like you said, they don't know of the 10-plus-year relationship that you have with that dancer.
Right, which has all been, you know, above board and for the best of the dancer, but now you're looking, all right, hey, new person in the, you know, in
right,
you know, perspective. Like, how do you, as a teacher and as a business owner, insulate yourself while still fostering the kind of good connections with the dancers that help those dancers to succeed?
Yeah. And again, we don't have all the answers, but I mean, as a studio owner, you also don't want any student perceived to be a favorite, because all that does is breed animosity for all of the, you know, not favorites,
right,
even though we don't have favorites.
Yes. A round table of teachers. No teachers have favorites. No. All teachers have favorites.
Not all teachers shouldn't show their favorites.
Yes. I mean, everybody.
But it's like, you know, there's that perception of all the parents in the waiting room too, that you never want someone to come to you and say that, you know, oh, well, so-and-so is quitting because they don't think the teacher likes her.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And when you're a male teacher, right, to kind of bring it back to where this sort of thematically goes, right? When you're a male teacher with a favorite dancer, a spin can be put on that.
Yeah.
That would not be, if Courtney, you had a favorite dancer.
Right.
And Christian, you had a favorite dancer.
Yeah. It's
a third party observer may find your favorite dancer to be a weird, like, well, why is Christian taking such an interest in that dancer?
Exactly.
Whereas they would not have said the same thing about, right, Courtney. And that's just something that as a male teacher, you just have to, you have to watch for. It's even more of a reason, by the way, to not have favorites.
Yeah.
Right.
Or to broadcast who your favorite is. But at the end of the day too, I feel as a teacher, it's everybody, like we said, everybody has dancers that might do a certain move or technique maybe better than another dancer. So you like them because they can do this or that, or you just have that favorite because your first day, you know, they were the nicest person to you. You know, they just brought a great energy into the classroom. But like you said, there's that whole aspect of needing to be professional. And at the end of the day, the number one thing we need to do is child safety, child protection, you know, and that's, like we said, that's always the number one thing on our mind, but it's not something that, I don't want to say that we're not always thinking about, but it's something we are always thinking about.
Or just be prepared to defend yourself, or be prepared for the possibility that anyone out there may need to defend or justify certain things.
Look, it is, listening to you guys who obviously share a business and share a care for your student's success, right? It is something you're thinking about, but the deeper you get into the rabbit hole,
yep,
of all the times you have to think about it, the more you're like, wow, I believe in this, but I didn't even know I would have to think about it when a dancer doesn't get picked up, when we've got to get a dancer from show A to show B, when a dancer wins the Aroctus or achieves their goal and I want to celebrate with them, right? You think about it in a context of, hey, I want to create a safe environment. I'm going to do everything I can to keep kids safe. And then you get to that moment of like, well, every moment an outside observer is going to be independently judging whether I am living by those values.
Yeah.
And it's harder to realize like, wow, every moment is a potential liability for me, the business owner, not because I am in any way being creepy, but because I'm not thinking about every moment being purposeful.
And that's a lot of pressure and responsibility.
Yeah, it sucks, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
But like you said too, like when your dancer wins an Aroctus, or, you know, they've got that, they've finally gotten the achievement that they've been working so hard for, you want to celebrate with them. But, you know, from that outside perspective, that might be seen as, wait, what's happening? You know, as where if that was a guy teacher to a female dancer, I feel like the questions could be asked there, as where if it was a female teacher to a female dancer or a female teacher to a male dancer, it might not be asked or looked upon in that kind of manner.
So something to think about. Again, we don't have answers. We just have concerns. If you were nervous before this podcast, you're nervous now.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really what, I mean, the goal of the whole podcast, you know, every episode is to give people things to think about or educate them on something that, you know, you thought, hey, being an Irish dance teacher will be fun. And then you get into it and you don't really know what you signed up for anymore. And this is just an issue that hasn't yet been covered on the podcast, but I think this is really the most important episode that has ever been put out there.
Well, I think Ryan and I would like to thank you, Courtney, for having us on your podcast.
Agreed. No problem. Thank you for having us. This has been fun.
I think you guys are already plotting your next appearance.
You know,
we have a Facebook chat about it.
We did consider taking it over when you were on vacation briefly.
Yeah. Yeah. So
stay tuned for the Christian and Ryan only episode.
Getting kicked off my own podcast. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we hope that you guys have enjoyed listening to that episode. I know that there was a lot being discussed, and who knows, maybe we haven't even touched some of this stuff. So we want to make sure that we hear from you. If you're not already, please jump into our listeners only Facebook group. You can find it in the show notes or at facebook.com/groups/TCRG2CEO. Ryan, Christian, and I would love to hear your feedback. Anything that you found particularly interesting or something that you learned, or we'd also like to know anything that we missed. If there's some type of topic that's related to what we discussed but we didn't explicitly cover, definitely comment on the episode post so that we can cover it in an upcoming episode. As you heard, the boys would love to be back, and we would love to do another episode for you. So thank you again, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on TCRG to CEO Radio.